This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. Mark Twain once said that the difference between the right word and the almost right word is like the difference between lightning and a lightning bug. President Franklin Delano Roosevelt found the right words to electrify Congress in his speech after the Pearl Harbor attack. His first draft said that America was simultaneously attacked and called it a date which will live in world history. Roosevelt's revision conveyed the shock and resolve of a nation at war.
December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy. The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan.
These days, the wrong words can be infamous, too, in trending tweets and foolish Facebook posts. Joining us from NPR in New York is renowned editor Sir Harold Evans. His new book, called Do I Make Myself Clear?, aims to help people write with precision and punch. Sir Harold Evans, welcome to 1A.
Hi.
What is your one best rule for better writing?
Conciseness, limit the number of words in the sentence. We've seen an increase in the number of words go down a great deal going back to the 19th century when they were starting being counted by a scholar in Nebraska. And nowadays, it's quite common to find a sentence with 10, 12, 14 words, whereas previously, the Victorians were writing in 75 words to a sentence. So shorter sentences, and everything I'm saying, I can qualify, but I'm making the bolder statements at the beginning. So that's one thing. Second thing is be aware of abstractions. There's a marvelous analysis of what I call the ladder effect. You think of a ladder as a series of rungs, and you want concrete steps that are firm and are going to allow you to go from an ink-stained finger in Iraq to the abstraction of democracy. And in good writing, you go from the particular, the specific and the concrete, which you must have. You must fill your sentences with cows and beds and books and women and cigars. And then you ascend this ladder to the abstraction of democracy.
So very clear imagery.
That's a concept. So there's many examples of great writing, but all great writing is relatively simple, relatively concrete, and spares the abstractions. But many abstractions are created by writers, and I've called the mechanism by which abstractions are so common in our speech is due to the zombie effect. They're zombies.
The zombie effect?
What is a zombie? A zombie is a noun that's swallowed a verb. So the verb has lost its potency.
Give me an example.
Okay. I authorized Joshua to interview me this morning. Okay. That was reported as Joshua was given authorization under various acts of implementation to carry out a conversation with Sir Harry Evans. He actually authorized it.
Yeah.
So, but the authorization, there's hundreds of examples, and there's hundreds of examples also of what I call flesh eaters. I'm trying to make everybody scared. I want people scared enough to know that most of their sentences are inhabited by flesh eaters. These are flesh eaters are things like work with a minimum of delay, ASAP. With a view to, that's just need to say to, with regard to, in receipt of, all these. There are hundreds of them, and they're really awful things. In fact, in the book itself, I have a photograph of flesh eaters.
Of one of those,
actually,
of the microbe. Yeah, the microbe. And actually, that's one of the things about the book that I noticed. I read the book, and there are lots of, for one thing, useful lists of, for example, flesh eaters or cliches that people tend to use or words that people tend to confuse, you know, terms that are very, very similar. But I wonder, though, as it relates to conciseness, you also have a lot to say in the book about social media, which in some ways has forced people to be much more concise, much more to the point. Even if it's just writing clickbait headlines, it's still a form of conciseness. But you have a lot of concerns about the impact of social media on the way we write as well?
Well, there's two questions about social media. And of course, like everybody else, I use it. I'm in that jungle. The first question is that so much of it is an approximation to accuracy. So much of what we call fake news originated, as we now know, in Facebook and was a travesty of what I was brought up to do, which is to ascertain the truth of a fact. That when you're speaking casually or writing casually on Facebook or Twitter, and by the way, Twitter is an example of conciseness, but not necessarily of accuracy, as we know, to our cost. So that's a separate issue. I'm just trying to imagine a world in which people thought before they put the word down. And we, most of us, don't. And one of the problems of the speed of the velocity of today. Now, the worst thing in the world that's happening is in business language. For instance, I met a very clever scientist the other day. He said, "I have to go to my liquidation event." Oh, I say, what are you doing, selling your microscope? He said, no, a liquidation event is now the business word for selling your company. Wait a minute. And the other thing that was driving him crazy, the word's accretion. And the best example of this was when, with good intentions, one of the founders of Facebook took over the New Republic, and they were the fakery of the marketing speak was an example of words run amok.
Yeah, a lot of the business kind of speak. A lot of business speak and buzzwords, which is kind of all over every press release.
Exactly right, Joshua. You know, they said, we're going to create magical experiences through cross-functional collaboration and align ourselves from a metabolism point of view with an integrated vertical media company. My God.
Oh, goodness.
Why are we murdering the language? This is what George Orwell went on about all those years ago.
With newspeak.
Let me ask you,
as we continue our conversation with Sir Harold Evans, the author of the new book, Do I Make Myself Clear? Why Writing Well Matters. And I should say, we welcome your questions for Sir Harold Evans about writing, about ways to improve the way with which you write. Email 1A@WAMU.org, comment on our Facebook page, or tweet us at 1A. How did you become a good writer?
Well, people may want to debate how good a writer I am, but let's say I edited millions of words. First of all, I began as a young newspaper reporter, and because I took phonetic shorthand, I took everything down. So I'm in the court or a council meeting, and I'm taking it all down, and I think, I wish I could get this over with, because they're so long-winded. It's so verbose. How can I shorten this while retaining the accuracy? And by the way, in those newspaper days, as some people here may remember, you had to be concise because hot metal type wasn't rubber. It had to fit the space allotted to it in the newspaper. So that was a very good first training. And then, of course, I was passionate about literature, about reading Charles Dickens, and even now, of course, my love of my life is Shakespeare, which I began reluctantly, like a schoolboy going to, like a snail to school. And now I don't, because I now appreciate the subtlety of the language and all that, you know, tomorrow and tomorrow, et cetera, et cetera.
You know, it sounds like part of what you're asking writers to do is write the way that human beings actually speak. We talk about this a lot in public radio, about writing for the ear instead of writing for the eye, because you only get one chance, really, to hear me read my script, so it had better grab you and make sense the first time. Is that part of what you think we're missing, a more human touch in writing?
Oh, yes. It's a wonderful example. In fact, one of the points I make in the book is when you've written something, read it aloud to yourself.
Yes.
This is what the author of Madame Bovary, Gustave Flaubert, used to go into the garden at his home after he spent the day writing, and then he would declaim to the flowers and the plants and the trees. And of course, they didn't answer back. But that didn't matter, because he heard the sound of his own words resonate imaginatively, and it clarified, he realized as he read it that that sentence didn't make sense. What is that pronoun referring to? Is this adjective appropriate? Do we need this adverb? What about this pleonism, like the garden was made up of 3 acres of land. What else could it be made up of? Huh. If it's 3 acres, it's bound to be land. So redundancies like that, for instance, as you well know, in the position you're in, with a very precious medium
right.
of radio, quick radio, when you have a redundancy that you're wasting my time, your time, and all those wonderful listeners out there who are seizing their pens to say, why are you using 5 words when you can get away with one?
Exactly, and they don't have to do it with pens anymore. They can just do it on Twitter.
No, I believe that. Is that true?
Exactly. I'm Joshua Johnson. You're listening to 1A. I've noticed that the terms of service for many tech companies like Google and Facebook are written in very plain English these days. They're lengthy, but they are extremely easy to understand. Who do you find is making a concerted effort to write more relatably?
Do you mean to write more accurately?
Well, to write in more of a human way.
Well, that's a good question. I think that what the President of the United States has given an example of being human on Twitter, and some people don't like it because it doesn't always expose a great depth of thought, but at least it's conversational and human. And one of the things I wanted to say was when I was complaining earlier on about the business language, Donald Trump, I mean, I'll give you one example. This is look at the clarity of this language. Now, I actually deplore the sentiment. That's me. You don't have to believe that. But this is what he said. We have to stop illegal immigration. We have to do it. USA Today, USA. And when I hear some of the people I'm running against, including Democrats, we have to build a wall, folks. We have to build a wall. And a wall works. All you have to do is go to Israel. And you say, is your wall working? Yes, walls work. Now, as I say, it's not my particular sentiments, but you have to say when you compare that with the convoluted language of much business is appalling in the use of language because they actually conceal what they're trying to say. When you get an insurance policy and you get to the small print, you can't work it out because they don't want you to work it out. When you get a health policy, which doesn't cover what it says it covers, they don't want you to understand it. So this is really important. So what I'm saying here is there's no doubt what Donald Trump means.
Right.
I don't like it. That doesn't matter. What I'm saying is that the lessons to be learned from the way people really speak.
Let me get
and
to
then, of course, you have to go through you've heard yourself speak in the garden, the daffodils and the tulips. Then you've got to go through as a writer and say, what can I save here? Am I clear?
Right. Let me get through a few audience comments before we run out of time. Jacqueline emailed us, as someone who attained my master's in my 50s, the pressure to write academically in universities has expanded my vocabulary, but also undermined what I learned from Willa Cather, economy, elegance, and exactness. Bill emailed us, what does Sir Harold think about people who pepper their opinions with phrases like sort of or kind of when they're giving their opinion? I find it really annoying when people who are paid for their opinions use these wiggle words to imply that it may or may not be the case.
My word for them is weasel words. I'm really against it. It's very interesting you should mention Willa Cather. I mentioned Willa Cather in Do I Make Myself Clear? Because Willa Cather was one of the people in the Nebraska Institute which was trying to shorten sentences. And she deplored the approach, actually, because Willa Cather's a marvelous writer, as you say. And so that's a very good example. No, I'm told in speech, for instance, I'm preaching conciseness, but when I'm trying to find the password, and Apple is so driving me crazy because every single minute they want a password. So when I'm trying to find out what my password should be and somebody shows me how to get it, I'm not only do I say thanks, that's enough. I say, thank you very much. I'm very grateful to you for putting me on the right path to solving my password problem. That's what I say. I wouldn't write it like that, I hope.
There is one thing about your book I have to admit that I took issue with. I made a list of all the words in your book that I had to look up as I was reading through it. Here's my list. Coruscate, solecism, execration, vocative, not evocative, but vocative, nomograph, prefatory, gallimaufry, pleonism, deco, encomium, aoristic, not heuristic, but aoristic, and casuistry. What's up with all the SAT words? Since we're talking about writing well, is all that fancy vocab really necessary or helpful?
Well, the I would argue one of the things I've done in this book, of course, is to give a glossary where I identify words that are misused all the time. And I think it's important to try and find the precise word. And some of the words you've mentioned, there is no alternative for some of those words.
Yes, well, but there has to be an alternative. If the word can be defined, then it can be written in another way. Like coruscate. There's got to be an alternative word for coruscate.
Which one?
Coruscate. What does coruscate mean?
Coruscate means to glisten and to
shine. So why didn't you just write glisten or shine?
Because coruscation suggests something not shining like light blinding you in the eye, but it's more like a series of lights, like diamonds in a cluster. They coruscate.
Okay.
You wouldn't say, would you say the diamond lights up? No, you wouldn't say that. How would you describe a multicolored bracelet with lots of diamonds in it? How would you describe it?
Well, I might have said that it lit up, but I won't say that now. I don't know.
Well, look, if you go through the book, for instance, commonly, let me just say this.
Briefly, we're short on time.
I'm very proud of the glossary. I'm very proud of, because I've pointed out all the words that are misused and why certain more precise words are to be. Let me give you an example.
You're going to have to make it very brief. We're very short on time.
Okay, just rain, R-A-I-N.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How often do you see that spelled R-E-I-G-N?
Way too often. Way too often. And that's one of the things about the books that I think, and I'm sorry to cut you short, but that is one of the things about the book that I think is extremely helpful, that just having a guide for words that tend to be misused, along with all the other guidance in the book called Do I Make Myself Clear? Why Writing Well Matters by Sir Harold Evans. Sir Harold Evans, I appreciate you making time for us. Thank you very much.
Thank you for being coruscating.
One A comes to you from WAMU, Smart Aleck, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. I shall choose my words very carefully for tomorrow's Friday News Roundup. This is One A.